Now, one of our board members and practitioners, who has been very busy this morning, Lee Huffman, will come forward and share with us some words and some treatment.
Good morning. This large book is actually two books. It's called the Complete Edition, but it has two different versions of The Science of Mind, which is the foundation written by Ernest Holmes of this teaching. And how many of you are readers? Okay. A lot of us in this group are. And it's interesting. How many of you are the type of reader that reads everything in the book? Sometimes. Well, it's interesting. This book, because of the way that it's been put together, has a couple of forewords in it. So it has multiple forewords. There's three forewords in it, one to the combination book and one to each of the books. But I wanted to read today from the foreword of the first edition. Let me get this straightened out here. And from Science of Mind by Ernest, I always mess this up, Scherfeliff. Holmes, I think I got it right. Close enough. 1926, he wrote this. And he's our founder, as Bob mentioned, and our first leader. And it's interesting to look and see what he was thinking when he wrote the book that we, as practitioners and ministers and people who follow this philosophy, really bring to this. He said, in presenting these lessons... So he knew it was a book to teach from. In presenting these lessons on mental science, I do not claim to have discovered any new truth. The truth has been known in every age by a few. But the great mass of people has never even dreamed that we live in a mental and spiritual world. Today, however, there is a great inquiry into the deeper meaning of life. Because the race, meaning us, has reached a state of unfoldment where broader scope is possible. I believe that those of you in this room, all of us in this room and in this teaching, are part of that greater inquiry, are looking and saying, what is out there that is different? And what is the universe trying to teach us? He goes on to say these lessons are an attempt to put into the spoken word and into print some of those great truths to the enlightened of all ages. So it's not all the great truths, but he wanted to bring it together from multiple teachings. Move forward here just a bit. The seed of freedom must be held within the shell of the human. But like the prodigal of old, man must have a great discovery for himself. Although the journey may at some times seem hard and the burden too great to bear, man still feels a subtle sense, a mystical presence, a divine reality. Thus, the inherent nature of himself is forever seeking to express itself in terms of freedom. We will do well to listen to this inner voice, for it tells us of a life wonderful in its scope, of a love beyond our fondest dreams, of a freedom that the soul craves. But the great love of the universe must be one with the great law of its own being, and we must approach love through the law. This, then, is the teaching, love and law. That's how he sums up the whole book, love and law. And so it's not as quite as somewhat overwhelming, actually, looking at it that way. As the love of God is perfect, so is the law of God is also perfect. We must understand both. So this book contains the fundamental teachings of Ernest Holmes and Science of Mind. It is the same teachings that Reverend Bob Dean, Reverend Angela, Reverend Paul, he's going to be back here in a few weeks. That's what spoke from this platform. It's what's in here. So if you want to read something, you may want to just grab one of the two that's in here. But it's amazing to read it and to look at yourselves through the eyes of multiple world religions. As he says in his foreword, Ernest Holmes did not create or discover any new truth. He only simply documented the truth that has been understood by a few spiritual leaders for centuries. He also brought us a form of prayer that we call treatment. A treatment, or a spiritual mind treatment, as you may hear us call it, is actually an affirmative prayer that has somewhat of a structure just to keep us in line. And if you want to learn more about treatment, next Sunday, right after the service, Bob will probably talk about this, so the practitioners will be down front, and between about 10 after 12 and before 1 o'clock, there'll be a short class on treatment if you want to join us for that. So consider that. Let's go into treatment together. Let's relax and take everything off our laps and position ourselves in a way that we know that the earth and the chair and all this that has been created around us for us will support us. Open your stance so that you are receiving the truth that comes to you through this talk. We say affirmative prayer in the first person, so know this with me if you will. I know that there is one God, one Spirit, one entity that is the source of all there is, all that has been, and all that ever will be. I call this entity Source because it is the source of all that there is. Out of the desire to express itself, Source created everything. It created law and love. It created this universe. It created this beautiful building that we're in. It created every living being, including myself and those within the sound of my voice. Source created everything out of itself. It created love and law. Because it is love and law. It created me and those around me because it is me and it is those within the sound of my voice and more. Source created everything and is everything. The love of Source envelops me. It supports me. It energizes me. Without the love of Source, I scarce say that I would not exist. Without embracing the love of Source, I am not complete. Without the love which comes from Source, I am not whole, and I cannot sustain my true potential. Today I embrace the love of Source. I feel the love of Source all around me, and I am supported by the love of Source. Today, through Source, I can discover and attain my true potential. It comes to me through Source. I release these words knowing that love and law are of Source. The love and law of Source is all that there is, and therefore, it is all I need to be complete. So I am complete. And together we say, so it is.
Very nice. Thank you so much. And thank you for the birthday wish. I'm 49. So... Actually, I decided a while back, I'm just celebrating that I'm an eternal being, and I just made it around the sun one more time. So that's just good enough, right? Okay. And wow, it's good to see everybody. It's good to be here. It's good to have this opportunity, to have the freedom to do this, to be able to stand up here and tell you what I think, however right or wrong it may be, or however clear or foggy, however much like an eagle or whatever the other side of that was that I tried not to listen to. You know, thank you. Thank you for allowing this. And thank you for letting me be here and for supporting the center that allows a place for me and others to speak our truth and to bring this teaching forward. I want to start off today by sharing a little bit of a story from a dear, dear friend of mine who some of you may know, Chris Michaels. Yeah, I see some nodding heads. Chris has been around this teaching longer than I have, even though he's not been on the planet quite as long. He became a minister in 1990, and a few years ago, he wrote a wonderful book called Your Soul's Assignment. If you want, speaking of people who like to read, if you want something that's a whole lot more readable than the textbook, I mean, textbooks are great, but you got to really sit with it and dig in it to understand what it's talking about. This one, however, is this will just kind of breeze you through. And it's he starts off this book by telling a story of his journey to the teaching, his journey to life. And he starts out talking about the struggle he'd had as a young man and how deeply into some addictions and other things he had gotten. So I'm not speaking out of turn. It's all in writing. And but at one point, he really hit the bottom and decided to turn some things around and move back here to Atlanta from L.A. To get away from, I'm not sure what, but he moved back here. So he said as he got back, he found this community, and we all know which one he's talking about, where he began to hear that God is not the old man upstairs, nor God is the one doling out prizes or punishments based on your behavior or arbitrary things you may not even know about, but God is an energy, a power, and it's a power for good. And it's a power for good that only desires one thing from us or for us. And that is that we participate in expressing our good, expressing that good that this one power is. And he discovered that that power is not something you have to go get or something you have to create or something you have to jump through hoops for or something you have to ask to be blessed in order to have, but something that is innate, inherent in our very nature. And what he began to do is use that awareness and use that innate, what he calls God power, to begin to create a different experience for himself, to use it constructively. He had demonstrated, as many of us have, I certainly have my stories, which I'll spare you, some of them, is using that power to create a real mess. To create things, you know, to create destruction and self-destructive behaviors and create all kinds of things to go on in life. Those real depths. And he really began to realize that he could use that same God power to create something wonderful for himself, something different, something more constructive. And what he decided to do was to create a belief system that matched the life that he wanted and the world that he wanted. And he says when he started that, it started out just wishing he could have a belief system like that. And he went from that to being willing to have a belief system. You know, if when you're becoming willing to believe that you're better than you were, becoming willing to believe that you could construct a greater life, means letting go of all our reasons why we don't. You know? I mean, I've found myself a time or two arguing for my limitations. But you just don't understand. I'm old, I'm fat, I'm too young. You know, we argue for our limitations, we get caught in that. So becoming willing to create a better idea of constructive life sometimes means being willing to let go of arguing for our limitations. So he did that, and he became willing to believe something differently. And then he began to work on those beliefs, to work with those beliefs, and he decided he really wanted to believe these things. And then he found himself at the stage of believing there's a power for good, believing this power for good can make a difference in his life. And he lived and worked and chewed on that until he reached a point of knowing. Where it wasn't a matter of just believing it, but he knew it. He knew it with his bones. It's kind of like I believe that chair will hold me up, and I can stand here and believe it all day, but until I sit down in it, I don't know. And that's where the knowing comes. That's where the faith comes, to use another word, or the trust. And that's what he did. And in that, he really transformed his life and came to a new place. And he said there was a third phase here, and that is to grow in greater love and willingness to always grow in greater love than he'd ever done before. Ernest Holmes, near the end of his life, said, "I've explained the way the law works. I've taught you how to use it. I've shown you all the little nuances that we ways that we trick ourselves into into thinking we're doing something we're not. All the ways to unmask and uncover this spiritual law, this whole business of what I believe manifests for me, what I think and feel inside, shows up out there. And if I want to change my experience, I change how I think about it." He said, "I've shown you all of that. I've demonstrated it. I wish I had another lifetime to teach you how to love." That's powerful. This is the third of a series of talks asking the basic questions of life. First week we talked about, who am I? I'm an expression of the divine. Second week we talked about, where am I? I live in a spiritual universe that responds to me according to my belief. And today we're asking the question, why am I here? Duh. Why am I really here? What is my real purpose in being alive? You ever have moments in the middle of the night? Sometimes that doesn't start till about 35 or so, where you wake up in the middle of the night and you go, "Oh my God, why am I here? Did I even get here? How did I even get here? How did I get from where I used to be to where I am now? And how am I going to get to whoever's next?" And all those kind of middle of the night, nuancy, scary kind of questions. Well, we're not going to do the scary part. You've already done that. Part of what I love about this teaching is that, you know, we don't believe in hell, heaven and hell. The only hell we believe in is a state of consciousness, and I've already been there, so I don't need to go there again. So heaven is the only thing left. So we're only going to look at the heaven side of things, or we're mostly going to look at the heaven side of things today. And this is what he says at the end of that first part of the book. He says, "Your life," he as in Chris Michaels, not Ernest Holmes. Oh, I think Ernie would agree with him. "Your life is a love story waiting to happen. Your life is a love story waiting to happen." What's it waiting for? Nothing. What's it waiting for? Your decision to participate. What's it waiting for? This moment. So it's really not waiting for anything. I would change that to say, your life is a love story happening now. And it's happening however you are choosing or not choosing to participate in it. Now, I am not talking about some schmaltzy channel show where, you know, it all turns out gushy and there's roses and little hearts floating around and all of that. I'm talking about the kind of love story that is all about really getting a handle on what you love. Getting very clear about what you love. And then creating the story of that in your life. Most of us are already doing this, one way or another. Hopefully you're doing the work you love. You're creating a love story in your work. And if you're not, then let's talk. Because working our love and loving our work is what we're here for, in my opinion. These are my answers, by the way. You may have different answers, and yours are perfect for you. These are my answers to why am I here. See, I'm here to love, and I'm here to keep growing in that love. And I, this being my birthday weekend, I'm really liking the idea that my life is a love story waiting to happen. It's starting right now. It doesn't have to wait. I didn't already do it. Now, I've been doing it, But the real story is starting right now. Your real love story before you, with yourself, for yourself, in the world, starts in this moment, right now. And the next moment, and the moment after that. Too often we get the idea that we reach points where it's over. Or we've, you know, we've just done all there is to do. Or we're just bored. Then I invite you to wake up and start paying attention to, what do you love? What gets your energy going? Think about falling in love. I'm sure everybody's done one version or another of that, right? You just get all goo-goo-eyed and you can't think about anything but that person and how wonderful it feels. And everybody that you meet on the street is your friend. You know, you're just in love with the world. The birds are flying around you, the little chirpy blue birds like who's it, Cinderella, one of those, has. You know how that feels. It's not the other person that gives you that feeling. That feeling comes from inside of you. So you get to fall in love like that over and over and over and over. And then you get to allow it to grow into more mature love, where you are actually in the business of reaching for and giving the very greatest possible good to the object of that love, including yourself, where our purpose becomes simply creating our love story on a day-to-day, moment-to-moment basis. Now, there are some other answers to this question of why am I here? One of those is, I'm here to learn lessons. I'm here so I can learn lessons and God can whip me into shape. Goodness knows some of you need whipping into shape. I need whipping into shape. That's not what it's about. None of us need whipping into shape, to be truthful. What is the truth is, the lessons come, and we will have many lessons from the infinite, from the universe around us, but they come as a guide for us in our path to creating that love story that matches the truth of who we are. Because part of what happens in those love stories on TV, when they fall in love and all of that, then something happens and pops the bubble, right? There's a misunderstanding, there's a miscommunication, or one person or the other is not able to absorb as much love as they thought they wanted, so they get defensive and start pushing people away. All that can happen in our lives. Not only with other people, but with ourselves. How much good can I stand? I worked with a person a few years ago in another state that later became a practitioner and minister in this teaching. And at one point, we'd been doing a lot of treatment work, and I mean, everything in his life was popping. He had prosperity like he'd never had it before. He had a loving relationship like he'd never had before. His kids had come back home after having been estranged for a long time, and on the story went. And one day he called me, and he says, is it really okay for me to want more? Is it really okay for me to keep absorbing? He said, I'm so afraid I'm going to do something to sabotage this because I'm not accustomed to this much good in my life. Do you ever have that feeling where the good things happening to you is just too much or it's too good to be true? I know what they say. If it's too good to be true, it probably isn't. But in this teaching, what we know on a deeper level is it isn't too good to be true. If it's true, it's good. And it's very good, and it's very, very good. I'm here to love. That's why I'm here. We're also here to create, some people say. Our whole purpose in being here is to create or co-create lives, co-create good in the world. And my answer to that is yes and no. The creative process is automatic. You're already creating the experiences in your life because this law that we teach so much about in this teaching works automatically. It's just doing its thing all the time. You don't really have any control over whether it's going to work or not. What we have control over is how we use it. Kind of like Atlanta traffic. You don't have any control over it, but you have control over how to use it. And we use it by what we believe in. And what we love. And the coolest thing about this wonderful spiritual law is that works automatically is it always says yes. That is the blessing and the curse. So So you're not really creating. All you're doing is directing the creative process on your behalf in the way that you see as your highest and greatest good. Spirit is creating. Life is creating. Creative process is creating. Mental process. I mean, we teach all the classes about how that works and why it works and all of that. But for today, take my word for it. It's working automatically and saying yes. You get to choose what it's going to say yes to. And you choose it by what you love. You know, if you love winning by beating other people down, then you're choosing to use the law in a way that is not designed. Because the law is designed to work and this in a wholeness, in a oneness, so that what's good for me is good for you. And I can't use it to one-upmanship somebody else. All I do is one-downmanship myself. Does that make sense? Yeah. So you're here to love. And you create along the way. By what you choose to love, by what you want to see more of. Think about it. The things you love, you put time and energy into, you put your money into, you buy flowers and candy and all of that. And the same thing is true for every aspect of our lives. Maybe go slow on the candy. Some people say we're here to save the world and fix all that's wrong with it. Good for them. Good luck. I have my hands full saving this world. I don't know about you. Maybe you're doing better in all that than I am. And out of what I find passionately changing in my life, I'm making a difference in the rest of the world. It's not like an either or. Can't change the world without changing me along the way. And probably first. Make sense? Yeah. It's that old Jesus thing about, you know, that you can't get the speck out of your brother's eye because you got a log sticking out of yours. Kind of thing. I always thought changing the world meant changing my partner, whoever that was, or changing my family or the other people around me. If I could just get them to behave, I'd be all right. You guys know the name for that, right? Besides foolishness, codependency. Then I discovered that if I make a difference and change my life and change what I love and let the law of creation work through me and for me along that line, people around me change. It's amazing. It's kind of like my parents suddenly got smart when I was about 35. Those of you who are younger know that that time's coming. They didn't get any smarter. I just started understanding what they were talking about all those years. So we work, we open up, we find out what we love, we pay attention to it, put your time in it. And if you've reached a point in your life where you feel like it's all done, I got a surprise for you. It isn't. The first law of life is a law of growth. If I heard that once, I heard it a million times from Kennedy Schultz and others. The first law of life. Life is about growth. That means it's about change. That means finding what we love sometimes changes. I don't love doing the same things I used to. I used to love to party all night and stay up the next day and eat breakfast and go through that day and go off to work and be just fine, I thought. I don't love doing that anymore. I can't, but even if I could, I want to. Not my love. And it was fine for then. Met a lot of wonderful people who are still friends now. People who now are loving, supportive friends in this teaching and similar. Find what you love. Allow it to change as you change and grow through different rotations around the planet. And trust that as you love and love more deeply, those things that matter to you they will make a difference in you and in the world. You have the entire consciousness of life, God itself, saying yes and supporting you in that shift and that change. So your individual purpose may be very different from mine, because what you love will be different from mine, for me. Your individual loves are going to all vary, and that's the beauty of what makes it up, makes it all work together. But how sad if we give up on those, if we back off. He quotes what, which is the darker side of things, Langston Hughes. What happens to a dream deferred? Does it trip up? Does it dry up like a raisin in the sun? Or does it fester like a sore and then run? Does it stink like rotting meat? Or crust and sugar over like syrup sweet? Maybe it just sags like a heavy load. Or does it explode? The truth is, none of your dreams have to be deferred. If you have deferred them up until now, now's the time. You get to start brand new and bring those dreams to the front and allow them expression through you and for you. Because once you get clear about them, you've got the universe saying yes, and away you go. And I'll close with this. This is a prayer, spiritual mind treatment, that Chris wrote. God is love and I am love. I was created out of spirit's desire for self-expression. I live in this world as a representative of the divine. Every person I meet holds the same status. We are all equally valuable to God. Love permeates my awareness, fills my heart, and becomes the magnetic force that draws people into my life. My relationships with others are founded in love and respect. I recognize and honor the divinity in them, and I see the value that we each bring to life. Wholeness and balance are the center of all of my relationships. I love spirit, I love myself, I love all of humankind. Together, we make up the full picture of universal love. Thank you, God, for all the love that is in my life today, and for the gifts that others bring to my world. And so it is. Join me, if you will, in spiritual mind treatment. Let's take a moment and allow our minds to simply guide us down to our heart's deepest desire. Take in a moment to think about what you love the most. What the things in your life that you love, that you'd love to love even more. The things in your life that seem a little out of reach, but that you still love the idea of. The people in your life that you love, whether they're lovely or not. And just allow yourself to think that over. And choose one thing. And in your mind's eye, or in your mind's ear, find yourself, if you're willing, saying, "Today I choose to love X, Y, or Z. And I'm willing to know with Bob that that means I live in a universe that is saying yes to that love and can do nothing except be engaged, because love is the name of Source. Love is Source itself. Love is life itself. Love is God itself. So as I am choosing to love, I am activating the power of God, the power of spirit, the power of life in that one idea, that one moment. And my unconditional love of that aspect or person or place or thing draws forth the highest and greatest good for that love, the highest and greatest good for me as a participant in that love. And brings great joy and ease and freedom. I choose freely whom to love, what to love, how to love, where to love. And I am the decider, the chooser. And this amazing universe in which I live just says yes, 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 and flood to me and those and that which I love with greater love than I've ever yet imagined. I open my heart to it. I open my awareness to it. I allow it to unfold in my life. This is my truth. I let it be my truth, for it is now God's truth. I let it be so, and so it is. Thank you. Deep breath. Yeah. And if your love was for yourself, go buy yourself some candy and flowers this afternoon. You deserve it, all of you, because you're wonderful. I love the center. I love everything about it. I love the fact that we have it here. I love the fact that we're in Midtown. I love the fact that we are surrounded by this opulence. You know, this is the Southern White House. It shows up in movies all the time. We are in the center of a gorgeous and beautiful place. And that is because we love it. And because we love the center, and because we love bringing it, and because of your generosity in helping this continue to be. So I thank you for your gifts. I thank you as you give freely and joyfully for all the multiplying that happens, because the law says yes, more and more and more.